Man, oh man, today's going to be even busier than yesterday. Yesterday, we could have done a six-hour show. We had so much stuff. Welcome, everybody, to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. You are right where you need to be, listening to the program with the most insight and the most up-to-date information you are looking for on local and national and statewide information going on here in Washington. If you want to contribute to the conversation, you, of course, welcome to do so. Just go ahead and give us a shout, either by phone or by text, same number to both, at 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. I'll tell you where I want to start. I want to start local. We have another update here with the Boeing strike, the machinists. This is really turning into a really fascinating story. Yesterday on the commute, I gave you Boeing's latest contract offer, the details of Boeing's latest contract offer to the machinists. Now, the machinists union is furious because they've been on strike for about 2 weeks. The union leadership was under fire from their own rank and file by recommending that workers approve the first deal that Boeing made to the machinists. And 94% of Boeing workers said, no, we don't like it. Basically told not just the company, but told their own union president, John Holden, to go pound sand, to use a really, really polite term. And so they go, you know, the workers are out on strike and the company starts another round of negotiations with the union. And the union, according to the company, was stalling and the company got tired of waiting. And so the company said, you know what? We've got a really good offer on the table. Just put it directly out there. And so they posted what they offered on their website. And a lot of people who were thinking that Boeing was being unfair to the workers took a look at what Boeing was actually offering the workers and are saying, that's not such a bad deal. And we had comments on the KVI text line, and we're continuing to take them today, and we'll share them to see if there's any change in how KVI listeners see this issue. We also took a phone call from a Boeing machinist who made it clear that the workers really can't stand management. And that might be playing into this. But again, they've got a brand new CEO who's just been on the job for a few weeks. And so I don't think he's the cause of all that. He's just kind of walking into all that. But anyway, Boeing had said that the workers have until Friday night to approve the contract offer. Now they're going to give them a little more time. And admittedly, the company was taking a risk by just saying, you know what, screw these negotiations and the union leaders who are stalling another round of negotiations. Just make our offer directly to the workers, see what they think. So here is, and I'll get back into reminding you what was on those terms were. But I got a very interesting email from KVI listener Steve in Tacoma. Says, John, I have to comment on the caller you took before 8:30. Yes, he was referring to yesterday, 8:30. The machinist who hated Boeing's latest offer. And during the course of our conversation, he said to me, you know, we're getting screwed over by the company. And he said, you know, compare us to other workers. I said, well, okay, how about if we compare you to auto workers? Are they getting as good a deal as the machinists? And he kind of changed the subject. So anyway, here's what Steve in Tacoma had to say. You gave the auto industry as an example of an industry where similar workers don't make as much as at Boeing, an example that he dismissed. Well, I worked for 12 years as chief financial officer for an Auburn aerospace company, one of many Boeing subcontractors in the King Pierce County area. We employed about 40 aerospace machinists, as do all other Boeing subcontractors. The quality of the parts we made for Boeing were subject to stringent quality standards because, as the machinist you talked to yesterday on the phone said, people's lives depended on it. But our machinists, along with those of virtually all the other Puget Sound subcontractors, don't make anywhere near what Boeing machinists made, nor were our benefits as generous, including health care and 401k. Our machinists got bonuses, but only if our company achieved its profit goal. We would have been out of business if we tried to match Boeing's machinist pay package. We were non-union, as I believe all the other subs were. So that gives you an idea of how a lot of people in the aerospace industry, not just at Boeing, but just throughout the industry itself, how they see this. Let me give you a quick recap of what Boeing is offering and what they had been offering. Okay, they had been offering 25% over 4 years. Essentially, you get about 6% a year for 4 years. They have upped that from 25% wage increases over 4 years to 30% wage increases. And it starts with a 12% pay raise. So when you start with a 12% pay raise and then have 6% the second year, 6% the third year, 6% the fourth year, that is actually more like a 33% pay raise. That's a third higher than you're making right now in 4 years, 4 years' time. Second thing is, Boeing had offered, and the union leadership initially accepted, a $3,000 ratification bonus, simply meaning that if they voted yes on the contract, they get $3,000. Well, they've now doubled that to $6,000. The end-of-year bonuses, you know, those famous Christmas bonuses that they give out to the machinists, were going to be eliminated because of the 25% pay increase. Now they're reinstated. So the Christmas bonuses are reinstated with a 30% wage increase over 4 years, which, as I just mentioned, is actually closer to 33% wage increase over 4 years, rather than a 25% pay raise and the elimination of those bonuses. Turning to benefits, Boeing has a 401k program. They've had that program for 10 years, and they have, here is what they've offered for the 401k. The company puts in 4% of your salary as a company contribution to your 401k right off the bat. So whether you put in anything or not, the company puts in 4%. All right. They will now also match an additional 8% of employees' pay. So they put in 4%, and employees can put another 3%, 5%, up to 8% of their pay into their own 401k, and the company will match up to 8%. I'm not really aware of another company that does that. And, you know, some of the hardline machinists are saying, well, we want to go back to the defined benefit pension program. Well, that's not going to happen. It's never happened. I found it kind of humorous that you had this woman who is a machinist who was complaining, we want our pension back. And she has only been at the company for 5 years, so she's never had that. So she's saying she wants something back she's never had. So that's what they're offering. And I'm asking KVI listeners a very simple question. If you're a Boeing machinist, you're already making head and shoulders more than a machinist at any other company. And now Boeing is offering, again, 30% wage increase, which is actually even higher in lower paying machinist gradations, in lower experienced workers. But anyway, 30% over 4 years, a $6,000 bonus if they vote yes, and the reinstatement of the Christmas bonuses, plus they'll put in 4% in your 401k, and they'll match up to another 8% if you put in. Is that a contract worth voting for? Go ahead and let me know, 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. You can either call or text. All right, you are listening to the radio program, A Record of the John Carlson Show. You know what we do on Wednesdays, don't you? Yes, that is right. Our legendary lyric contest. I will be giving you, when we come back, the legendary lyric of the morning. It's from a hit song from the early 80s. And when you hear it going in or out of commercial break, you be caller number 10. We have some nice prizes coming your way. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI, 18 minutes after 6. Philip J. around the corner with a social media sweep. Good morning. No, Joe Cocker is not our legendary lyric. Hey. Welcome back to The Commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Our legendary lyric today comes from a song from the early 1980s. You know how this works. I give you a lyric. When you hear that lyric from that hit song going in or out of commercial break, be the 10th caller and identify either the artist or the song. And some nice prizes come your way.
I've got the list. You ready?
I'm ready.
A $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card, 4 passes to the new movie Megalopolis.
Oh, cool.
And the new Cheryl Atkinson book, Follow the Science.
A 3-fer package, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so you got Cheryl Atkinson's great new book, Follow the Science. You've got, which is debuted at number one in her category on Amazon. Number two, you get a 4-pack to the Francis Ford Coppola movie, A Megalopolis. And third, you get the $50 gift card at Daniel's Broiler. Good at all 4 of their locations. Okay, here is the lyric. Where does the answer lie? Living from day to day, if it's something we can't buy, there must be another way.
Ooh, this one sounds familiar. I'll have it before the segment is up.
Okay. That's it. That's how this contest works. People go, oh, I don't know. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, no, I've heard that. Up. And then eventually it hits you. Again, one more time. Where does the answer lie? Living from day to day? If it's something we can't buy, there must be another way. There you have it. When you hear that lyric going in or out of commercial breaks, just give us a shout. 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. What's going on in the social media world right now?
We can pick up on a story that you were hitting on yesterday on the show. This is the fallout, the backlash to the F America comments by Seattle rapper Macklemore.
He in trouble.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They just dumped him from a Las Vegas music fest,
yep.
and he was supposed to be the headliner.
That's where I'm going here.
That's a guy who can't afford to miss any gigs these days.
The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. So Fox 13, a lot of other news media outlets are posting this version of the story, but the Fox 13 Seattle social media post sums it up. It says, on the heels of the two Seattle sports teams responding to Macklemore's derogatory remarks, which included the words F America at a musical performance in Seattle last weekend that was intended to benefit Palestinian causes. The singer has now been dropped from a Las Vegas music festival where he was set to headline. So he's gone from headliner to off the bill. And Brandy Cruz has posted, I'm offering to take over Macklemore's spot as an investor for the Seattle Kraken. I bring no money to the table, but lots of enthusiasm and Minnesota hockey know-how. As a bonus, I don't hate America. So there's what Brandy wrote.
Brandy. All right.
I would encourage Macklemore to, since he got dropped from this Vegas concert, I would encourage Macklemore to go set up a concert in Gaza or, you know, maybe Lebanon or Iran or Syria or even the West Bank and perform his song Same Love, which was about respecting homosexuality.
Yeah.
And go and, you know, bring along an Arabic translator if necessary, depending on where you are in Lebanon or Syria. You might need a French translator. Some people speak French in those countries. If you're in Iran, you'd need a Farsi translator. But bring that Farsi translator along. Go perform in Iran. Tell them all about what the song Same Love is about, respecting homosexuality, and see how the crowd responds, Macklemore.
And how the government
and responds. To give a little context to this.
Guessing it won't be a very long concert tour.
Yeah.
How,
I was just going to say, there's a website called humandignitytrust.org. It's a human rights group. And on their website, it says Palestine. Same-sex activity is prohibited in Gaza. The relevant provision carries a maximum penalty of 10 years imprisonment. So if McLemore is so enthusiastic about Palestinians,
yeah, sing it
and
over
so
there.
Enthusiastic about his song Same Love, what gives?
Yeah,
that's all.
Again,
that's all I want to know.
Yes, that song is again his anthem, mm-hmm. celebrating same sex love and affection. Mm-hmm. Sing it over there and just see what the response is.
Yep. And there's another note.
By the way, is it just me or is McLemore's career?
And that's what I was getting to. Yeah, he was set to headline the Neon City Festival in Las Vegas. How much do you think tickets to the Neon City Festival were?
I'll guess $100.
Well, if music fest, that means you're there for
multiple acts.
I don't know.
Right?
Well, I'll say $120.
It was free. He got dropped from a headlining spot on a free music
Ouch.
Festival.
Oh, man.
And then, one other thing
that's
that I
low.
Wanted
Ow.
To add about this song that he's famous for. McLemore's famous for basically three songs.
Thrift Shop.
Same Love, and then
Can't Hold Us.
Can't Hold Us is the other big one.
There's
and,
more.
And the song Same Love was adopted by the group in Washington, Defense of Marriage Act, as kind of their theme song
as
for
a
their
defense,
push for getting,
defense of marriage.
Yeah.
But that goes back about
gay
10
marriage.
Years.
Exactly. So that's where McLemore has gone. He's gone from Same Love, promoting homosexual marriage, and now to defending Palestinians, I guess.
So what does McLemore have in common with Colin Kaepernick, the former quarterback?
They're both losing jobs?
Well, no.
Oh.
As their careers had clearly hit the downslope,
mm-hmm.
they embraced radical politics.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They jumped from a declining career where they had achieved superstar fame for a little while. And as their careers were on the downslope, they jumped into another cause to try and get that high and try and get a resurgence of that feeling of euphoria of being part of a huge cause that you're in the middle of. And Colin Kaepernick did it regarding police. Anti-cop, and you had McLemore, who started out being pro-Palestinian, then pro-Hamas, and now anti-American. He actually said F America, and it would be nice if the Kraken and the Seattle Sounders, which he has a very minor ownership stake in, basically said, here's your money back. Someone who feels that way about this country is not someone who really should be part of our ownership group. It's coming up on 6:31, The Commute with Carlson. Oh, it's not our legendary lyric. Our legendary lyric is from a hit in the 1980s, and here it goes. Where does the answer lie? Living from day to day? If it's something we can't buy, there must be another way. When you hear that lyric going in or out of commercial break, again, just be caller number 10. Name the artist or the song, and you get not one, not two, but three nice prizes. Gift card to Daniel's Broiler, a 4-pack of tickets to the new movie that, quote, everyone, close quote, is talking about, Megalopolis, and then a copy of the new hit book, Follow the Science by Cheryl Atkinson. Okay, let's keep it local for a while. The Washington State School Superintendent Chris Rakedahl has been in office for 8 years. During that time, our public schools have received a record amount of funding, a record amount. During that same time, test scores in Washington have either leveled out or gone down. And during that time, record numbers of parents are pulling their kids out of the public school. According to King 5, Chris Rakedahl is pushing a nearly $3 billion increase in K-12, kindergarten through high school funding. But ironically, he says we need an income tax to make this happen, a state income tax. But he's not acknowledging that the state has been diverting money that was supposed to go to schools. This is a very big deal. And Alejandra Guzman, from Fox 13 just interviewed Reichdahl's opponent, David Olson, who I've endorsed for the position. And again, I don't know why this isn't a major front page above the fold story everywhere. Have a listen.
According to Olson, other good intentions have gone by wayside. About 20 years ago, the state said lottery revenue would go towards education. It hasn't. Not in full, at least. Same song and dance when marijuana was legalized. Olson says the majority of the revenue is sitting in the general fund, and legislators are deliberately choosing not to fund education.
Shame on you. Shame on you. Because our students in this state are the leaders, future leaders of our state. That's what I would advocate for, is the state to start meeting its duty. And if they don't, I'll go back to Supreme Court and say, hold the state in contempt like they did 10 years ago.
He says the more we underfund our public schools, the bigger the disservice is to our students. Olson says students and their families are spending more in tuition taking remedial courses because they're just not as prepared as they should be. I've reached out to teacher unions to get their take on this, and we'll update you when I hear back.
Okay. So just follow, literally follow the money here. The legislature, dominated by Democrats, and of course with a Democrat in the governor's office, have been diverting money that was supposed to be spent on education to the general fund. Again, money that was supposed to be used for education from lottery and cannabis sales is instead just diverted to the general fund, where you can spend the money on education if you want, but you can also spend it on hundreds and hundreds of other things. So these same Democrats who have allowed this money to be diverted are now saying, oh, the only reason our schools are underperforming is because of a lack of money, and that's why we need a new state income tax. Do you really think, again, we are living in an era where not only does more money not solve problems, more money actually makes things worse. More money has made homelessness in Seattle and now the surrounding areas worse. More money has made drugs, the drug situation, overdose deaths worse. It's how they are spending the money. And if you look at how the Seattle School District is, they've got record funding. They got plenty of money, but it's how they're spending it that is making the schools worse. Okay. When people are leaving, when people are choosing to pull their kids out of school and spend between $10,000 and $20,000 a year per child to educate them elsewhere, rather than keep them in the public schools for free, that's an indication they're not getting good value. It's an indication the schools just aren't doing their job. To the phones we go. Here is Quentin calling from Grays Harbor, Aberdeen Hoquiam. Hello, Quentin.
Good morning, John. John, I want to comment on the bullying strike situation. And I'm of the mind that when two competing parties go together to contest something, you have to have an understanding that you have to know when you are winning and when you have lost. And I think it was pretty shrewd of Boeing executives to post their offer to the public, because based on the machinist who called in yesterday, was very passionate and very resistant to the offer. And based on what Steve in Tacoma shared with you, the text from Steve that you shared this morning about the wages the machinists make for his subcontractors that he's the CFO for, I think that the Boeing machinists have won. I don't think they recognize it yet. Now, it may not be what they want right now, but I would take it as a first down. Take it as a first down, go back to work, and then maybe you can renegotiate sometime in the future. But it's like a football team just won, just got themselves a much-needed first down, and the coach throws a flag, and it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think that given the fact that Boeing has lost $25 billion in the last 5 years, given the fact that Boeing's share price is down 40% in a year's time, that they are offering a 30% wage increase, a $6,000 bonus just for going back to work, and a 401k match of, after the company puts in 4% a 401k match of an additional up to 8%, that's a pretty good deal for machinists who already get far and above what machinists get at other private sector companies. So I'm not sure what else the company can do, but that's a pretty good offer.
I agree.
You know, and like I said, we are taking text messages. And I thank you for the call, Quentin. We're taking text messages from listeners. Do you think the machinists should continue holding firm and staying out on strike, or should they accept this offer, go back to work? Should the company, if the workers don't accept this offer, should they start entertaining options like handing off more work to South Carolina? Remember, the last time the machinists and Boeing went at it with each other, and it was ugly, Boeing ended up locating its second 787 assembly line. Remember, they were going to have two assembly lines up at Payne Field, up at their Everett plant. And Boeing got so fed up with the union that they built a new assembly plant in New Charleston, South Carolina. And that assembly line has been operating for the better part of a decade. So it's not like Boeing doesn't have options. One more thing to consider. Other aerospace companies have come to Washington to scout out building, you know, relocating their company or expanding their company here in Washington. All five of them said no thanks. They thought better of it. They came here. They saw the state's climate, business climate, taxes, regulations, land prices, et cetera, and said, nope, don't think we're going to move to Washington. Just something to consider. Lars Larson, our noon to three host, right around the corner on the Commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. Back we are, the John Carlson Show. Talk Radio 570 KVI. My buddy Lars Larson, our noon to three host. Good morning, Lars.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. Very interesting pair of polls out the last couple of days. The first was the New York Times Siena poll of three battleground states.
Yep.
Three battleground states that are absolutely key. In Arizona, Donald Trump is leading Kamala Harris by 5 points.
Yep.
In Georgia, he is leading by 4 points. In North Carolina, which has gotten a little crazy with their gubernatorial candidate there, he's up by 2 points. And then in the CNN poll, they show that Kamala Harris has a 63-point advantage with black voters, but Biden had a 75-point advantage. Among Hispanics, she has a 19-point advantage, Hispanic voters, but yeah, Biden had a 33% advantage. So what do you make of how things are shaking out?
I think the more it's, you know, the old adage that familiarity breeds contempt. I think most people thought they know, well, we know who the VP is, but they really didn't care. The VP is kind of an unimportant position most of the time until something terrible happens. So what happens when you start to get to know her and you find out, number one, she doesn't stand for the position she used to take because they're toxic. I oppose fracking. I want to force people to buy electric cars under an EV mandate, all of those positions. So she abandons all those, but she won't tell you where she is. And then when she's asked just ordinary garden variety questions, not high-level political stuff, but how are you going to fix high groceries? And she says, well, we have to do something about it. But she has no it's clear that she has no clue what it is that she proposes to do about it. So she gives a nothing answer. I think the more people see that, the more they're going to say, I'm not voting for that. She has no clue about the job. Trump, on the other hand, offers specific proposals. Whether you agree with them or not, he at least offers, this is what I will do. And we've seen him work before, so he's a known quantity to most Americans, whether they like him or not.
I think that if they simply compare how they were living 4 years ago to how they're living now, and whether the world was a safer place, yes, it was 4 years ago,
yep,
and whether the border was a better place 4 years ago, yeah, We had one, for one thing, and it was guarded and it was secured. So, no, I see that happening as well. Lars Larson, every day of the work week from noon to 3 on the John Carlson Show. When we come back, violent carjackings have tripled in 1 year. Why is that happening here? We'll talk with Chris Loftus from the State Patrol about what is going on as the Commute with Carlson continues. Hour number 2 straight ahead. It's 3 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Yes, this is Wednesday. You know what that means. Our legendary lyric contest underway. The way it works is I read you a lyric from a classic hit song from the past. When you hear us play that lyric going in or out of commercial break, be caller number 10, 206-421-5757. And identify either the artist or the song, and we have not one, not two, three great prizes coming your way. That includes Cheryl Atkinson's great new book from Amazon, as I believe is number one in her category. It is called Follow the Science, and you get a nice little gift card from our friends at
Daniel's Broiler.
Daniel's Broiler, yeah. All four of their locations. So here is your lyric. Where does the answer lie, living from day to day? If it's something we can't buy, there must be another way. I guarantee you've heard that lyric many times in the past. When you hear us play it, and we will be playing it in less than 90 minutes, be caller number 10, 206-421-5757. Okay. What on earth is going on when it comes to carjackings? There are 3 months left, more than 3 months, before the end of 2024. And yet, this year, Seattle has tripled the number of armed carjackings that it had in all of last year. 300% increase. 46 of the 66 carjackings involved weapons, compared to just 16 last year. The total number of carjackings with or without a weapon has increased from 39 4 years ago to 114 last year, and it's going to be much bigger this year. Drivers are being told to be vigilant and to be careful. The State Patrol is cautioning people on what to do. And Chris Loftus from the State Patrol is with us now. Chris, I want to talk to you about these numbers. But before we do that, tell us how carjackings are carried out and what people should do if they think they're being carjacked. They might think that they have just had a little fender bender.
Right. Well, and the case of the ones that we're seeing on the interstate, it is that sort of, we call them bump jackings, where somebody will come up from you behind, bump your bumper. You do the right thing. You say, oh, my goodness, I've been involved in a little fender bender on the freeway. I need to pull over. I need to exchange information, make sure everybody's okay. You're doing the right thing. But really, it was just a ruse to get you to pull over. And then once you pull over and you're fumbling around looking for your license information and your insurance information, all that sort of thing, someone's coming up on you. And the case of the last three that we've seen on I-5, they were armed. They were wearing ski masks. They punched the drivers. They stole their phones, their wallets, and then eventually their car, and they drove off. And so people were just left on the side of the road. So while you're still in that confusion of what just happened, you and your car and your possessions are headed down the road.
And I gave the numbers for Seattle. What is happening statewide, Chris?
Statewide, we're not. It's pretty rare on the interstates, actually. You know, we've had the three recently that's gotten a lot of attention. But that brings us up to four for the year on the state roads, which is what we have last year in 2023. We had four on the interstates. So the Seattle Police Department is definitely seeing a spike inside the Seattle confines. But we're not seeing that, although we had three, you know, within 24 or 48 hours since last week. We're not seeing a huge spike, but one is way too many. I mean, this is armed robbery. This is about as dangerous a thing as you can do. And so far, we've had one arrest of an 18-year-old male, but we in that arrest, we also took in two 13-year-old females that were in the car with him, and so detained them and then released them to their families after investigation. But these are young people. In every case that we saw last week, every victim said, hey, these were young people, probably teenagers. So these are people who are starting their criminal careers, unfortunately. The very armed robbery on the side of the road is about as high up the ladder as you can get. So.
Well, the other thing to consider here, Chris, is are these teenagers, these juveniles, are they starting their criminal career doing this, or have they graduated?
That's a good point, and I'm sure our investigations are continuing, and we like I say, it's odd that anyone would start at that level. You're absolutely right. Whether it's gang related, whether it's some sort of organized activity, certainly it's hard to imagine that people are doing thrill seeking, at that level and starting. But whatever it is, this is really serious crime. This has really serious consequences, and you got to think about, there's a lot of people who carry weapons in their cars. What our big fear is that this is going to turn into a shootout on the side of the road, which is, can't think of a worse situation, a more dangerous situation for the traveling public to have that sort of thing occurring.
So what should someone do?
Well, the big thing is...
If they're driving and they get bumped, what do they do?
Well, normally, I'll just say, 999,000 out of a million times, it's going to be an honest mistake. Some inattentive driver has bumped you, and they're scared out of their mind, you're scared out of your mind, and you've got to both calm down and exchange information and go your way. But with this unique situation that we're finding ourselves in, our advice to folks is to go ahead and get out of the flow of traffic, pull over, but don't pin yourself in. Don't get pull over to a point where you couldn't make a hasty retreat if you had to very quickly. Be situationally aware. If more than one person gets out of that car, if a group of people get out of that car, that's very suspicious. Certainly, certainly if they're wearing masks or, if they're armed, get the heck out of Dodge. Call 911. You are not going to be punished for leaving the scene of a collision if you are in fear for your safety at that scene. So call 911. Get the heck out of Dodge. Go to a public place. Go to a well-lit place. Go to a local police station, a fire station, a mall, anywhere where there's lights and people. Get away from the situation, but call 911. Let them know what's going on and let law enforcement do our jobs.
Have we had any instances that you're aware of, Chris? Chris Loftus from the State Patrol, my guest here on the John Carlson Show, where somebody was being set up for a carjacking and he had a concealed carry. And he says, they picked the wrong guy. I'm not going to be a victim. Have we had that happen yet?
We have not had that on our state's freeways. You have to speak to the Seattle Police Department to see if they've had that in their jurisdiction. But that is our concern. We do not want you to engage. We don't want you to engage in road rage situations. Obviously, the carjacking is not a road rage. Carjacking is an organized criminal activity.
Right. Well, self-defense is not road rage.
Right. Right. But we don't want you to engage in anything other than driving on the freeways. So if you're in a situation where it's at all suspicious, just get the heck out of Dodge. Let's sort it out later. But let's not put people in a situation where you've got to make those decisions about. We don't want you to make the fight or flight. We want you to flight. Mm-hmm. We want you to make that decision. Get out of there and let us sort it out later.
Again, Chris Loftus, Washington State Patrol, joining us. Again, the news is, here we go. This appears to be a problem mostly in the Seattle King County area. It is not, we are not seeing this epidemic statewide. We're seeing an uptick, an increase perhaps, but in Seattle, it has gotten completely out of control. Again, more than triple the number of carjackings this year than last year, and we still have October, November, and December to go. And
Well, you know, I was traveling in South Africa 20 years ago. I was teaching in South Africa 20 years ago, and when I rented a car at Avis, they had this sort of warning, that written warning when they gave you the car, that carjackings were a big problem, and here's what you needed to do. You needed to maintain a distance, not block yourself in to call, you know, their 911 system. You know, so here we are 20 years later, and we're starting to see it more and more. I believe nationally the statistics are that carjackings have doubled since 2019 nationally. So these are crimes of opportunity, and what we're asking all of our law-abiding traveling public to do is, let's not be a part of that opportunity. Keep your head on a swivel, stay right. calm, and if it's at all suspicious, if it doesn't feel right 100%, get the heck out of Dodge.
Chris Loftus, State Patrol, thanks very much for joining us. Appreciate you making the time, Chris.
Sure thing.
You got it. Here is, again, what captures my attention on this is the growing willingness and likelihood of these carjackers, A, to be juveniles, and B, to be armed. And of course, it's illegal for a juvenile to be carrying a firearm, period. So much for having gun laws. The question that I have is, do we hold juveniles accountable if they're caught with a gun? Do we hold juveniles accountable when they steal a gun? Now, what makes sense is that in a society that condemns gun violence, if you are caught illegally possessing a gun as a juvenile, or if you steal a gun, or frankly, if you're an adult who steals a gun, the law should come down on you like a hammer. If you are caught with a gun, it is a very serious matter. Except it's not in the state of Washington. Because the same Democrats who say that they are so concerned about gun violence that they're going to curtail the freedoms of law-abiding gun owners and hold them to ever higher standards of accountability have next to no accountability for juveniles who are caught with guns. We just had the mayor of Auburn on the show yesterday, Nancy Backus, who reminded our listeners, I've mentioned this to you in the past as well, that you have to be, that if you are caught four times, if you're caught four times with a gun, you will not see so much as a day in juvenile hall. See, I think if you are caught a second time with a gun, it should be minimum 30 days on ICE. And then it should double to 60. And then it should double to 120. But no, they don't want to stigmatize young people and promote the school to prison pipeline. And of course, my reaction to that is if they are committing ever more serious felonies with firearms, because there's no consequences for earlier crimes they've committed or for carrying a gun, you're helping them well along the way of that pipeline by not holding them accountable. No consequences. So it is actually liberals and lenient policies that are paving the way to this school to prison pipeline. Even, you know, the liberal experiment that Dan Satterberg and Jimmy Hung so self-righteously launched more than half a dozen years ago is a failure from conservative standards, i.e. it's not making us safer, it's not bringing down crime, and from liberal standards, less incarceration. It's led to more incarceration, because once they start sticking guns in people's faces and stealing cars and belongings, then you have to have them in custody. So again, that's our solution. Start taking guns and juveniles far more seriously, much earlier, before they start carjacking. It's 20 minutes after 7. Philip J. around the corner with a social media sweep on the John Carlson Show. Good morning. 25 minutes now after 7 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right. Philip J. Vandervoort III, what is going on in the social media world right now?
Kamala Harris interview update, if you're ready. The social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. So MSNBC Public Relations, their X/Twitter account, wrote, just announced at VP Harris will join at MSNBC host Stephanie Ruhle for her first one-on-one network interview since becoming the Democratic presidential nominee.
By the way, Stephanie Ruhle from MSNBC was on the Bill Maher show.
Okay.
And she was justifying Kamala Harris not cooperating with the media, not holding press conferences, not making herself available.
Did Stephanie Ruhle?
Stephanie Ruhle was justifying Kamala Harris not doing any of these things, praising her.
Did she use my rationale for this?
For being wise. Yeah. To not put it all out there.
Yeah, why would Kamala Harris go to national news, prominent news interviews?
So
when
who
can't look better in an interview than they make her without being interviewed?
So who does Kamala Harris choose to have her first one-on-one interview with?
Yeah,
Stephanie Ruhle.
Yeah.
I bet that's going to be a hard-hitting. She might be even tougher on her than Oprah.
J.D. Vance picked up on this. He retweeted the MSNBC tweet and said, this is legitimately pathetic for a person who wants to be president. Stephanie Ruhle has explicitly endorsed Harris. She's not going to ask hard questions. Kamala runs from tough questions because she can't defend her record. And then basically a Kamala supporter in the comments thread to J.D. Vance posted, can you tell me how many times Trump has done or how many interviews Trump has done with CNN and MSNBC in the last few months? Can you name them? And I don't have to name them for this particular snarky response. I think Trump was on a debate with ABC here a couple of weeks ago, and it was like two other competing interviewers trying to refute Trump at every turn.
Two debates with...
I'd say that's more than what Kamala's been up
to. He's done two debates with four media figures, all of whom are anti-Trump. Okay, there's your context.
All right.
He's done two 90-minute debates with four media people, none of whom support or even like Donald Trump.
All right. Cliff Mass, the University of Washington atmospheric sciences professor. He has posted his latest blog, which is a series of reasons to vote yes on Initiative 2117. And on social media, Cliff Mass posts, if you care about the environment and worry about climate change, vote yes on 2117. One of the things he writes says that we really need to replace the Climate Commitment Act with something that will actually measure and reduce carbon emissions. And he gives several different reasons about how the Climate Commitment Act does not measure any sort of reduction in carbon emissions. And so I think this is some of the things that he said before. He says, number one is to vote yes on I-2117 to end the ineffective and costly projects resulting from the Climate Commitment Act. And he says that it is a perfect example of pork barrel politics, the initial Climate Commitment Act, the CCA. So he writes, billions of dollars are being spent on CCA projects. Unbelievably, there is no requirement for these projects to estimate or project how much they will reduce carbon emissions. The vast majority of projects in Governor Inslee's law provide no such information. So,
well, that Todd Myers has been ringing this bell, and frankly, so has Cliff Mass in opposing. There have been two previous attempts to pass a carbon tax. One of them would have offset, reduced other taxes, and Cliff Mass was for it.
Okay.
The other was just an attempt to jam through a tax increase similar to what we have now, and the voters rejected it at the polls by about 12 percentage points, despite the initiative having huge funding and the opposition having next to none. So that's why I hope the voters emphatically support Initiative 2117. Absolutely. All right, it's coming up on 7:30. We have a very interesting race for Congress in Eastern Washington. You have two Republicans going against each other. Dan Newhouse, the lone Republican left in the House of Representatives who supported the impeachment of Donald Trump, versus Jared Sessler. We have had Dan Newhouse on the show previously. We've invited him back again, but he is a little bashful now. We are going to talk to Gerald Sessler, coming right up on The Commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI. You're right where you need to be. 25 minutes to 8 o'clock on The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. So in Washington State, the way it used to work is the top Republican vote getter, the top Democratic vote getter in a race for anything that was partisan, would go to the general election and face off against each other. State law changed several years ago to what is called the top two system, where in a very liberal district, like, say, the 9th congressional district, where Adam Smith has been the congressman for a generation, you will have two Democrats facing off against each other. Well, in the most conservative district in the state, the 4th district, which actually is the only district in Washington that starts at the Oregon border and goes all the way up through the middle of Washington State to the Canadian border. It includes Yakima, Tri-Cities. The congressional district is bigger than several states. Anyway, you're going to have two Republicans facing off against each other. Dan Newhouse, who is the scion of a famous Eastern Washington political name. His father, Irv Newhouse, served forever in the state legislature, House and Senate, and has a building named after him, one of the Senate office buildings. Dan Newhouse was a director of agriculture and a legislator, and has now been, I think, a four-term incumbent trying for another term. And Jared Sessler, who surprisingly and commendably defeated not just Dan Newhouse, but Tiffany Smiley, who was a late entry into the race and had all this money and momentum at her back, a name recognition from running for the U.S. Senate just 2 years ago. And yet Jared Sessler defeated her. And so he will be facing off against Dan Newhouse in November. He joins me, his first appearance here on the John Carlson Show on KVI. Jared, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, John. Thanks for having me, and thanks for the introduction, and I'm happy to be here.
Jared is not a politician. He served in the Navy, honorably discharged, has owned businesses, was once a NASCAR racer. What was your best finish, Jared?
We've got some trophies.
All right.
My boys have wildly outdone me through the decades, but some good memories there for sure.
Yes, and NASCAR is one of those sports where not everyone gets a trophy.
That's true.
Jared has run previously. I say he's not a politician, not a career politician. He has run previously, came up short last time. This year, he's got Donald Trump's endorsement and thinks that the 4th District, Yakima, Tri-Cities, is ready for a new direction. What will be different if you're there instead of Dan Newhouse, Jared?
Well, as you mentioned, we'll have an actual conservative representative for the most conservative district, not only in Washington, but the most conservative district on the West Coast. And unfortunately, Dan Newhouse is a bit of a chameleon. He doesn't vote conservative. You know, when you look at some of these, you know, you mentioned Adam Smith, and some of these deep blue districts, which, by the way, Doug Bassler did a great job for 5 terms running against Adam Smith. But I do hate the jungle system you mentioned. I think it's terrible. I don't think the incumbent should be protected with that. But
Jared, we're beginning to have trouble with your reception. You're kind of fading in and out. Are you close to a window, or, you know, can you see if...
Well, I'm... I'm on Starlink, and I live in farm country, so we'll do the best we can here, but...
That's okay. I once had an interview with Clint Didier in his tractor.
that doesn't surprise me.
He was plowing. Okay. Continue,
please.
He's
a great guy. Yeah, so basically just have, you know, I'm holding the conservative flag here for, or I should say, I hope to hold the conservative flag here for Washington State, and hope to turn this state around with putting the stake in the ground here in Washington's 4th district to win this race. And you didn't mention we won the primary, but it was very decisive. We won We beat Dan Newhouse by 10%. And, you know, going into the general, we feel very strong about that. But the point here, and the reason why people, your listeners, and mainly in Western Washington, care about this is I'm very passionate about turning the state, and I have a plan to do that. And we have the support and the people to make that happen. And, you know, so people should be encouraged that I'm running for this position and fighting for all that, you know, we believe in here in Washington State to bring some sanity here.
Okay. Now, you have said that some of your concerns are preventing the Snake River dams from being taken down.
Correct.
Defending the Second Amendment and right. defending a strong national defense, defending a strong southern border. Now, Dan Newhouse will say, oh, I'm already there. I'm already doing all that.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's an empty shell. He talks the talk, but he doesn't actually do the work. When you look at the work that he's done, not just in Olympia, but the work that he's done in Washington, D.C., he just doesn't deliver. And, you know, he's voted for a red flag law. He's voted for trillions of dollars of spending. The national debt has gone from $13 trillion to $35 trillion while he's been in Congress, and he's voted for virtually all of that. He voted for the Disrespect for Marriage Act, as I call it. He obviously voted to impeach the best president of our lives. He voted to support the warrantless surveillance of U.S. citizens. I mean, he has betrayed us with many of his votes. And that's why I call him a chameleon, because he comes home and he smiles and he acts nice and plays nice. But the truth is, he doesn't support conservative values, and he never will.
Okay. You carry the strong endorsement of Donald Trump. How is the campaign going money-wise, Jared?
It's going good. I mean, we're obviously lagging behind Newhouse because he's got all the special interest money. You know, we also don't have, you know, we have the endorsement of the Washington State Republican Party, but there's a lot of money on the establishment side of the party that supports the incumbent.
Yeah.
And you know, for obvious reasons, but we're doing fine. We'll have enough money. We were outspent 5-1 in the primary and still prevailed. I mean, there's no other campaign in the state that has, other than maybe the governor's races, that have the number of you know, volunteers that we have and the momentum that we have. So, you know, that helps us make up for a lot of it. But I would also encourage people in Western Washington, if you care about Washington and you want to see the state turn, then support Sessler for Congress and send me a donation.
Tiffany Smiley finished third. Again, you had three strong Republicans running, and you topped them all. What is she doing in the general? Is she playing a role at all? Is she visible?
No, she's laying low, you know, and I think that's probably, you know, by design for her. It's what she needs to do right now. And, you know, I anticipate having her full support, you know, once we win this thing. But, you know, she's just kind of being quiet right now.
You are going to be debating Dan Newhouse. Aren't there a pair of debates being set up?
There are, yeah, and I don't know that dates have been nailed down on those yet, but I do know there's going to be two, and I believe they'll be televised.
Well, I'll tell you, that's going to be good watching. That's going to be very entertaining TV. And Jared Sessler, you know, father of three, someone who has been very successful in small business. Why'd you turn to politics, Jared?
Well, it's interesting going back a bit. You know, you mentioned I'm not a politician. Just a brief little background on that. I was speaking at an event, I think it was last summer, and my daughter was home from college at the time, and we were driving home, because during the event I said, I'm not a politician, I'll never be a politician, don't look for me for, you know, political responses or, you know, photo ops or whatever, that's just not who I am. I'm very pragmatic, I'm an engineer, and my daughter said, rightly, she said, Daddy, you shouldn't say that, because it's a tremendous honor to be a politician, because you're representing the people. And just because others have messed it up, you shouldn't renounce it. And so I say today, I'll say, okay, I'm proud to be a representative, and I'm looking forward to, you know, to filling that role. But it definitely isn't one that I aspire to as a young person. When Obama was reelected in 2012, it was the first time I was politically numb, and I couldn't believe we were going to have four more years of that weakness. And so at the time, I started taking Hillsdale College classes and just educating myself on civics and sort of understanding how the system works. And then I was in Washington, D.C. on January 6th, and I came home and, you know, watched my congressman, along with, you know, 9 of the 10 congressmen in Washington state, vote to impeach the best president of our lives. And I just, you know, I knew this was a seat that I wanted to run for. And so I ran last cycle, and it was a complete disaster with, you know, 7 Republicans running, and I didn't make it through the primary to the general. And, you know, we just stuck at it and kept going. And really, this, it turned into a 4-year campaign instead of a 2-year campaign. And so, you know, that's kind of how it started. I mean, really, for me, I'm just disgusted that, you know, we send these people into the political arena to represent us, and then they completely betray us. You know, they don't have fiscal responsibility. I don't think they have the experience or the knowledge to even make a lot of the decisions that they're making. And they trust, you know, people that are completely biased. And so I just want to bring some sanity to that. I don't think none of us would run our homes or our businesses the way the Congress runs our financial, you know, state for the country. And so, you know, spending, you know, trillions of dollars every single year in excess of what we bring in, it just doesn't work. And so I'll shame everybody in D.C. that continues to want to do that.
Is there a model member of Congress, someone you look up to, someone who say, that's the kind of member I'd like to be?
Yeah, there's some good ones. I mean, Scott Perry, Thomas Massey, Jim Jordan, Bob Good, Byron Donaldson, you know, Matt Gaetz. These are all friends of mine. You know, I think they're really good representatives. I mean, I'm part of the House Freedom Caucus and have an open door to join that once I get elected, something Dan Newhouse has never done and never will do. So that's kind of the model. And, you know, these are members that are getting 95 to 100% scores. You know, Andy Biggs is another one. Eli Crane, both in Arizona. Good
Jared, if people want more information about your campaign, if maybe they want to make a donation, they want to get involved, where do they go?
You can find me. The website is jaredforcongress.com, jerrodforcongress.com. I'm also on Twitter as @Sessler, and I'm also on Facebook, although I have a team that runs that, so I very rarely look at it. But, happy to talk to people or encourage them. You know, my message to people in Washington State is the state goes in the ground here. We're going to take back our state. I have a plan to do it, and I need to get elected, and we'll start to implement that plan.
Imagine the first showdown on the floor of Congress between Pramila Jayapal and Jared Sessler.
Let's go. I'm having a red suit jacket with American flag lining made just for that day.
Jared Sessler running for Congress. Again, jaredforcongress.com. That's JERROD FOR Congress. JaredForCongress.com for more information. If you want to get involved or just learn more, JaredForCongress.com. Jared, thanks for joining me here on the John Carlson Show this morning.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
You got it. It is coming up on 49 minutes after 7 o'clock. The Commute with Carlson continues. 6 minutes to 8 o'clock on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right, we still haven't had our legendary lyric contest winner. We haven't played the lyric going in or out of break. It's got to happen sometime in the next 30 minutes. Here is your lyric for the day. Where does the answer lie? Living from day to day? If it's something we can't buy, there must be another way. That is from a famous hit song from the early 1980s. When you hear that lyric going into or coming back from break, be the 10th caller to 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. And you can win gift card to Daniel's Broiler Restaurants, one of the finest steakhouses on the West Coast, 4 locations, and copy of Cheryl Atkinson's great new book, Follow the Science. When we come back, we'll be talking with our old friend Carlene Johnson, who's talking to Boeing machinists about whether it's time to accept Boeing's offer or continue holding out. You'll hear right after this. It is 3 minutes after 8 o'clock, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you ever so much for letting me be part of your listening morning. And yes, our legendary song lyric contest continues. Sometime before 8:35, we will be playing a lyric from a famous song from the past. When you hear it, be caller number 10. Identify the artist or the song, and you've got some great prizes coming your way. Here is your lyric. Where does the answer lie? Living from day to day? If it's something we can't buy, there must be another way. There you have it. Where does the answer lie? Living from day to day? If it's something we can't buy, there must be a better way. All right. Coming full circle. Got a letter from a KVI listener about the Boeing strike, because we talked at some length. Boeing has presented what they call their best and final offer to striking machinists. They've been on strike for about a half hour, and they had given them a deadline of midnight on September 27th. That would be midnight Friday. Now they've changed. They're going to give them more time. Because they think they're getting some traction, but obviously not enough to call the vote yet. A lot of people within the machinists' hierarchy are furious with Boeing, and so are some of the rank and file, for instead of pushing this package with the negotiating team for the machinists, Boeing said things were stalling, and they said this is getting ridiculous, so let's just put the offer out for every worker to see for himself or herself. This is what we are offering, and give you a chance to see it. And of course, if they make it available to all the machinists, it's obviously going to go public. And so Boeing said, well, let's just post it on our website. And we talked about that offer. We'll give you some of the details again here in a moment. But we got a letter from KVI listener Steve in Tacoma. We got a lot of feedback, more feedback from KVI listeners about the Boeing strike and the wage offer and whether they should take it or not. We've got more reaction to that than from any political issue. Steve, the KVI listener in Tacoma, said, I worked for 12 years as CFO. That would be the top finance person, chief financial officer, for an Auburn aerospace company, one of many Boeing subcontractors in the King Pierce County area. We employed about 40 aerospace machinists, as do all the other Boeing subs. The quality of the parts we made for Boeing were subject to stringent quality standards because, as your caller on yesterday's show said, people's lives depended on it. But our machinists, along with those of virtually all the other Puget Sound subcontractors, didn't make anywhere near what Boeing machinists made, nor were our benefits as generous, including the health and 401k program. We would have been out of business if we tried to match Boeing's machinist packages. And then he goes on to mention that he thinks the wage offer is even better than 30% because it starts with a 12% raise, and then you get 3 6% bumps in each of the following 3 years. He says that actually adds up to 33.3% from the starting base over the 4 year life of the contract. He also said that, you know, some workers are demanding that Boeing go back to a defined benefit pension plan instead of 401k. He said Boeing's never going to do that. They did that 10 years ago. So this is not like something that they're thinking of doing now or they did a couple of years ago. This is something that was part of the last agreement from 10 years ago. He said, quote, it would put them out of business if they did that. I worked for Nally Foods for 25 years. In the late 80s, they converted to a 401k from a pension plan. Thank God they did. When I walked away in the year 2000, I had much more than I would have had they not done so. So we have been asking KVI listeners, tell me what you think about the offer. And we'll get to your comments here in just a moment. Again, you can make your comments at 206-421-5757. But real quickly, here's what Boeing offered before, which resulted in the strike vote. And here's what they're offering now. They had offered 25% over 4 years, plus an elimination of the end of the year Christmas bonuses, which are actually quite famous. and is celebrated by retailers all over because you've got tens of thousands of machinists with a lot of money to go Christmas shopping. Anyway, that was part of the deal for getting the 25% raise. Plus, they get $3,000 just for signing the contract. Now, what they're offering is a 30% pay raise over 4 years, starting with a 12% raise, followed by three 6% raises. So from 25% to 30% over 4 years. Plus, the bonus comes back. So the bonus had been eliminated. Now the bonus has come back. And they don't get $3,000 for signing the contract. They get $6,000. So a $6,000 ratification bonus. As for the 401k, tell me if you think this is reasonable. The company will start with a 4% contribution. So 4% of your wages, the company will make a donation to the 401k plan equal to 4% of their income. And then if Boeing employees invest some of their own money in their 401k, the company will match it up to 8% of their pay. Now, I'm aware that a lot of companies do 2% match, 4% match, sometimes 5% match. I will tell you, I am not aware of a company doing an 8% match on the 401k. But that is the new offer on the table. And here's some of what we are hearing from listeners. Edgar from Polsbo. The union members are not viewing what's being offered in comparison to what they were earning before. They are looking at how they can live prosperously like they were living 5 years ago during a better economy. These union members don't realize that the issue is the cost of living caused by the current administration. It's not their employers. Mike in Snoqualmie. The Boeing assembly line plant in South Carolina was of such poor quality, those airplanes had to be fixed in Everett. So if Boeing was thinking of moving assembly work moving more of its work to South Carolina, Mike says there would be quality control issues, which are already bedeviling the company. Keaton in Seattle. One of my good friends works at Boeing. I don't want him to lose his job, but I want to see Boeing leave and show Washington how awful it has come to run a business here in this state. Well, I will tell you this. There were 5 other aerospace companies that have come to Washington to scout out whether to either build or expand their facilities here. After all, this is where Boeing is. None of them decided to do so. The land prices are very high. The tax situation is not very good. The regulatory environment is insufferable. There are other places to locate, and that's what they did. Jeff from Olalla is on the John Carlson Show. Go ahead, Jeff. You're on the commute.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
I had a lot of family that worked for Boeing, and they were all pensioners. And what gets me is with this 401k, there's a lot of people don't ever fully fund it, so they don't get their maximum contribution out from the company. And you have to do this for their whole career. You know, you just can't backtrack and start, oh, I'm 55 now, I better start saving money. You have to be doing this your whole lifetime as a worker. And the problem with that is most people aren't capable of managing their own money. So they let a financial pro go 40% stocks, 30% mutual funds, you know, 30% bonds. And what happens when we're going to have this upcoming downturn? People that are close to retirement age that have their money in a 401k are going to get creamed.
Well, whose fault is that?
They're not ever going to have they're never going to have the work career left to get the money back. So that's why they want the pension back, because they realize that, hey, look, okay, I don't know how to manage my money.
Well, wait a minute. There's no, what are they, 8 years old? These are adults. What do you mean they don't know how to manage their money? They manage their money every month when it comes to paying their monthly bills. Why shouldn't a 401k be part of it?
Because most people are stretched so thin, they're probably not matching their total potential contribution at 401k.
Jeff, most people are on a 401k in this country.
That's the whole point. The 401k system is designed for the company.
It's not. It's designed for the worker. If you work at a company with a pension plan and then you want to go to a different company, bye-bye. You don't get to take your pension with you. If you have a 401k and you get an offer from another company, your 401k travels with you.
My point again is most people don't fund their their 401k completely, and they're not capable of managing themselves, so they leave it to the professionals. And when they get the big downturn here, it looks good on paper. We're way up in the stock market. But once that drops, there are going to be a lot of people that are never going to be able to recover because they don't have enough earning years left.
Well, first of all, you can move your money in a 401k. You can move your money from a heavy concentration of stocks and equities into more stable investments where you'll get a lower rate of return. But again, it's not going to be a roller coaster like the stock market.
Why do you think they want the pension back? Because people, they're finding out for the membership that, hey, look, we can't, most individuals can't manage their money in a 401k. You might be able to, I might be able to, Phil might be able to, but the vast majority of people, that's why the 401k is around, because it saves companies money.
Well, the question is whether Boeing could go back to a system like that without busting the company. I mean, they've lost over $20 billion in the last 5 years. Their stock price, speaking of stocks, are down 40% in a year's time.
They're never going back. The guys that worked at Boeing, and like I said, I didn't work there, but I talked to friends and listened, and they said the guys sold out their pension for a little amount of change that gets taxed anyway, that they'll never, you know, that you have to spread that bonus of what they sold the pension out for over your whole lifetime.
401ks are not taxed until you take the money out, until you start.
I'm talking about when to get these bonuses.
Drawing it. Oh,
sign the contract. Sign away your pension. We'll give you a $5,000 bonus. Well, whatever. That money's, that's chump change in the long term.
Okay, unless you invest it. All right, Jeff.
If you're capable of investing.
Okay, well, again, you don't have to. You can invest it with a financial planner. You can invest it with a broker. You can invest it, Charles Schwab. You can invest it the way it works best for you, Jeff. Tim is a 45, he's from Mossy Rock. He's a 45-year union member. Go for it, Tim.
I keep hearing you say, love your show, by the way, John.
Thank
you. You and Ari and all the guys. I keep hearing you say that you don't know of anybody that's gave over 8%. I worked at, went to work at the steam plant 1976. I worked there from 76 to 96, 20 years.
Yeah.
Washington Irrigation and Development was 76, then they changed names a couple times. They gave us a 401 plan. They gave us contribution, then you have supplemental.
Yeah.
Our contribution was 9%, and they matched it 1-to-1 up to 9%. And then legally, we could go another 6%, which gave us 15% is all we could put in legally, our wages.
Wow.
So nine contributions, 6% supplemental. And then when I left there at 20 years in 96, I had $358,000.
In what year? 401.
It was 76 to 96.
Oh, man. I think you're doing well then.
Until our brother Inslee shut the place down. And there were 650 guys that were making over $100,000 a year that went home to tell their wives they had moved to Nevada or somewhere that they could really, where they could work. Thanks to Inslee, he completely rolled up Lewis County.
Oh, yeah.
It affected everything. It affected the fire departments. It affected the schools.
You bet it did.
It affected everything.
Which company was that, Tim?
Well, it was Washington Irrigation and Development in 76, and it changed names. Pacific Corps.
Okay.
Was one of the later ones.
Yeah.
I don't know. They changed it a couple times, you know, the chess match stuff.
Yeah. No. Again, just a part of Inslee in the name of climate activism. Inslee declaring war on fossil fuels. All right. Thank you very much, Tim. Great call. Listen, it's 21 minutes after 8 o'clock, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. You are right where you need to be. Give us a call, 206-421-5757. Congratulations, Eric in Polesbow out there on the peninsula. Just won yourself a gift card to Daniel's Broiler. Good at all four of their locations, along with a copy of Cheryl Atkinson's great new book. We've already interviewed her twice about it. It's a bestseller. Follow the Science. So congratulations. That is, of course, Spirits in the Material World by the Police. Shortly before Sting departed the group for a solo career. And this was one of their first big breakthrough hits hit number 11 on the U.S. charts.
Okay, yeah. Right. Roxanne was probably the first one, but this was probably the second wave.
Was that, this was after,
yeah, I mean,
yeah, you're right. This was after Roxanne.
Synchronicity was kind of their high point. They broke up after that, but this was on, I think, the album or two before Synchronicity.
All right. Philip J. Vandiver III, what is going on in the social media world? Social media from Socialists, your favorite segment.
Well, as the campaign heats up for control of Congress, of course, the president's race is getting a lot of the attention. Congressional races, control of the Senate and the House, are also getting a lot of attention. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Seattle Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal posted, as it relates to the Senate, she wrote, "The filibuster was originally created by mistake in 1806. Every day we don't abolish it is a big mistake." And, of course, the Democrats don't like the filibuster because it prevents them from automatically passing stuff by a 50
They filibustered all the time when Trump was president.
Right. Yeah. So
they were engaged in filibusters all the time when Trump was president and you had a Republican Senate. They were constantly filibustering.
Yeah.
What hypocrites.
And a little bit of this post from Pramila Jayapal seems to revolve around comments that Kamala Harris has made on the campaign trail, saying she wants to get rid of the filibuster so that if the Democrats preserve their 50-plus-1 majority, they would be able to pass Roe v. Wade.
And
that
Puerto
presupposes everything that would happen in the House.
And Puerto Rican statehood.
Okay, yeah.
And Washington, D.C. statehood.
Yeah.
And packing the U.S. Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
This country would be unrecognizable by the time they got through if they, again, with 50 senators and with a bare majority in the House if they had it and if they win the White House, that is the kind of radicalism that they would impose on the rest of the country. In a closely divided country, they would go all out, up to 11 on the radicalism front.
And the filibuster was kind of meant to prevent rash decisions or just a slim majority imposing major changes and things like that. And
the
purpose it's meant to bring about consensus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The filibuster's intent, which is not created by mistake, the intent of the filibuster was to force both parties to work together. That's the whole intent of the filibuster. All right. It is 30 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, the commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. An endorsement for Donald Trump coming from a very unusual place, plus a massive Gallup poll a month and a half out from the election looks at which party has the most favorable conditions as we head into November. We'll tell you which party and what Gallup found out and why as the commute continues. Welcome back to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right. I love this exhaustive poll put out by Gallup. They put out a poll about 6 weeks before the election saying, here is the party that enters the home stretch of the election with the most favorable condition, the election environment. And Gallup, in a series of polls, has said that the 2024 election environment is most favorable to the Republican Party this year. Chief among these advantages are Republican advantages in U.S. adults' party identification and leanings, the belief that the Republicans rather than the Democrats are better able to handle the most important problems facing the country, Americans' dissatisfaction with the state of the nation currently, and negative evaluations of the economy with a Democratic administration in office. And again, this is something that Gallup does every 4 years. So this is kind of a big deal. And it starts out with something that is truly surprising to me. And that is that more Americans say that they either are Republican or lean Republican than are Democrat. It's a 48% to 45% margin. Again, 48% of Americans say they lean Republican or are Republican. 45% say they consider themselves Democrats. Now, that shows you just how far afield Washington State is to the rest of the country. We are much more inclined in Washington State. People are much more inclined to say they are Democrats than Republicans. But nationwide, not so much. So Washington State does not reflect the country. It is more of an outlier. Here's what Gallup says. This is in the words of the Gallup poll in their executive summary. More U.S. adults identify as Republican or say they lean toward the Republican Party, that's 48%, than identify or lean as Democratic, 45%. These figures are based on an average of Gallup polls taken during the third quarter, July to September, in order to minimize poll-to-poll variation in party identification estimates and to provide more reliable comparisons across presidential years, given the different timings of the two major party conventions. Party affiliation and voting are strongly predictive of individuals' vote choices, with a vast majority of identifiers and leaners voting for the candidate of their preferred party. At the aggregate level, there are typically more Democrats and Democrat leaners than Republicans and Republican leaners in the U.S. population. Democrats have won presidential elections in years in which they had larger than normal advantages in party affiliation, including 92, 96, 2008, Obama, 2012, Obama, and 2020. In years when the advantage was narrower, such as 2004 and 2016, for example, Republicans won in the Electoral College, if not also the popular vote. In other words, ever since the 1990s, more Americans have identified as Democrats than Republicans, when a lot more Americans identified as Democrats. In other words, when they had larger than normal advantages, they won. In years when there were still more Democrats than Republicans, but the advantage was narrower, then Republicans won. We haven't had an election in the last 30 years in which more Americans consider themselves Republicans than Democrats until this year. Again, it's hard to see that here in Washington State, but that number is a shocker. Here's another question. Which party is better able to handle the most important problems? Voters say Republicans, 46% to Democrats, 41%. What party is better able to keep America prosperous? The Republican Party, 50%. The Democrats, 44%. Presidential job approval. In other words, the other half of the Biden-Harris administration, 39% approval. What are the favorability ratings for each party? The Republican Party, 43%. Democrats, 42%. And which party is better able to keep America safe from international threats? Republican Party, 54%. Democrats, 40%. Here's another reason that things, according to Gallup, tend to favor the Republicans heading into the election. The top issues that Americans name as the most important ones are, number one, the economy. Number two, immigration. Number three, the government. In other words, support for or against the current government. And number four, inflation. Again, just reading the executive summary from Gallup. The party rated as better at handling the most important problem has won all but three presidential elections since 1948. The two parties tied on this issue in 1980, when inflation was the top issue. You recall Ronald Reagan won that election by 44 states. And again, the most important issues that the voters mention, their most important issues are the economy and immigration. In 2020, an election that Joe Biden narrowly won, COVID-19 was mentioned as the most important problem. In 2016 and in 2012 and in 2008, the economy was the most important issue. So and inflation is up there too, which many people, of course, would also consider an economic issue. This is a happy surprise to me. I did not realize that Americans, I assumed that more Americans would say they're Democrat than Republican, because again, that's just the way it has always been. This used to be a lot more conservative Democrats or moderately conservative Democrats. What these numbers tell me is that a lot of those folks have taken a look at the Biden administration. And just like many American Democrats in 1970, you know, in the Jimmy Carter administration, say, nope, not my party anymore. They became what became known as Reagan Democrat. You know, Ronald Reagan got the votes of one out of every four Democrats. That's why he won, you know, 44 states in 80 and 49 states in 84. One out of four Democrats voted for him. But what's happening now, and this is fascinating, is they're not Trump Democrats. They're becoming Trump Republicans. These are formerly Reagan Democrats who are crossing the divide and who now consider themselves Republican. And as a consequence, for the first time in decades, heading into a presidential election, more Americans, 48%, consider themselves Republican or lean Republican, and 45% consider themselves Democrats or lean Democrats. So the Republicans have a 3-point advantage. And I think, again, that's the first time they've had an advantage of any number going back as far as I recall this poll, which, again, is something that Gallup does every 4 years. So there's some interesting news that deserves far more attention than you can bet it's going to get from the rest of the news media. Hey, it's coming up on 12 minutes to 9 o'clock. You got the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. By the way, that Gallup poll asked people if they're satisfied with the state of the country right now. A grand total of 22% said, oh, yeah. 22% are satisfied. 78% not very happy at all. The Kamala Harris campaign is having some difficulty answering a question. Kamala Harris is having trouble answering this question, and now so is her spokesman named Ian Sams, who looks like he looks like Nathan Thurm. Do you guys remember Nathan Thurm from Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, this is
the lawyer
parody of 60 Minutes, wasn't it?
The attorney.
Mm-hmm.
This guy sounds like Nathan Thurm. Anyway, Pamela Brown from CNN, to her credit, asks him this question.
And I'll ask the question again.
Meaning he didn't answer it the first time.
Are Americans, does she think Americans are better off now than 4 years ago?
Well, I think when people are running for president, they want to see, what are you going to do for me? And it's not a retrospective question. It's actually a forward-looking question. And that's what she's doing on the campaign trail every day, is saying, I understand that we have to go further for people. There are still too many people out there who are hurting. Yes, inflation has eased a little bit and prices are starting to come down. But man, we've got to go even further. And when you look at the choice on the ballot in November, it's either me or it's Donald Trump.
Exactly. Let's see who's been there for 4 years. I love this guy. What are you talking about? The last 4 years, people aren't even thinking about that. They're looking forward. Why would you even ask that question? It's moving forward. That's what we want to do. Anyway, Nathan Thurm makes the case for Donald Trump. If only he weren't working for Kamala Harris. That's all the time we have for now, ladies and gentlemen. Get out there and enjoy.